Gudiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo.
Welcome back to the Peruvian Waltz podcast. I'm your host, Peter Galindo. Joining me this evening, for starters, is Renato Vilches in New Jersey. Renato, how are you doing?
Another day, another podcast day. Doing well as always.
Excellent to hear. Also joining us is Kevin Montalvan. Kevin, how are you doing?
Doing well, Peter. Building up hype for the next FIFA date.
Absolutely. That's why we are here tonight. And last but certainly not least is Chito Paulino down there in Peru. Chito, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great. Ready to share my all my hype about Lapadula.
You may not be the only one. You also may not be the only one who maybe disagrees with the hype part of that. But we'll get into that, obviously, as we continue. We'll start first, guys, because we're recording right after Melgar's 4-0 loss to Bahia in the second leg of their second round clash in the Copa Sudamericana. It was promising after the first leg because they obviously get a result. Was it what they maybe wanted ideally? No, but they gave themselves a chance and then went ahead and blew it in about the span of 25 minutes. They obviously end up losing 4-0, all goals conceded in the first half. Renato, what were your overall thoughts on the performance from Melgar and across both legs in general, and just the massive discrepancy, I guess, in the quality of those performances?
First, like, leg in Lima, that's this Melgar side was very, they're working their best against, let's just possibly say, like, a mid-table Brazilian team, but you can definitely say that the average mid-table Brazilian team is obviously higher than what Liga 1 would offer. But even by then, they were trying the best in the defense, the midfield, and the forwards, and they at least managed to get a result by 1-0. And then everything just went fluid once you got to the away game in Brazil, and by like the first 30 minutes, it was a disaster. Especially those two bad like mistakes that Carlos Cáceres could have easily avoided, which, come to think of it, his levels have started to be dropping for a while, actually, which is pretty questioning regarding his place in Selección soon at some point. However, if I can give some positives, at least from the first half, what I did like was the defensive line, especially with Alec Dumois there and Paolo Reyna, I feel like two of them have been like a bit of revelations in Melgar's defensive back line. And I hope maybe to see what they can offer in the next season or so. But man, it was just disappointing to see that result. And you can also say maybe it had to do with such a tight schedule between Liga 1 and Sudamericana, and also a mixture of injuries.
Yeah, and obviously they're not playing in Arequipa, they were playing in Lima. I know that that's maybe not an excuse for everybody these days during the pandemic, but I mean, it does come into play somewhat. But yeah, great points as well on Reyna and Daniel Mostier, because certainly Paulo Reyna, he's rising up the rankings of among Peruvian left backs playing in the league, that is. And surely in the next couple of years, he'll be on the full national team radar as well. Kevin, what did you think of the performances from Melgar? And maybe potentially looking ahead here, what do you think of them in terms of maybe their stock for the rest of the season domestically?
I think their stock has generally worn off. They got rid of Bustos, so right now they have an interim manager, Valencia. And, it's unfortunate, but I can definitely see that they had some kind of injury crisis, because you didn't see regular starters like Arias, Neira, Peirano. So these things can add up. They got a nice result in Lima. You know, that's good enough for the presentation. And unfortunately, they couldn't hold it together for the away leg. But that's kind of where Melgar is right now. They had a similar performance last year where they did all right at home and then fell off away when they faced the Ecuadorian side last year.
Chito, your thoughts on Melgar and just overall how they perform the two legs, and then also going forward here for the rest of the season.
Well, I think Melgar had a really bad game, but in general, as my colleague mentioned, it was a lot about luck. Because on top of all the injured players, we have to add Pretel, who got injured in the game against Alianza. I think he was one of those midfielders who was in charge of the free kicks. Sometimes most of the attacks started from him. So now without him, now that they had to play with Miguez instead, I think they got a little bit disoriented, especially because Miguez tried to be all over the place. And then on top of that, the first two corner kicks, I think, I don't know if Valencia didn't have enough time to practice with them or it was just bad luck, because they could have been easily blocked by the defense and by Cáceres as well. And then the whole first half was a nightmare. Something that really got my attention was that Valencia, I know he's the interim player, but he didn't go crazy with the subs. He didn't try to change the whole, like a lot of players right away. He took his time, which was good. And then on top of that, I didn't see a lot of players just creating a lot of fouls or just trying to injure the other players just because of the four goals ahead, which was pretty good. But then I think they're on the limbo right now, because in Liga Uno, they are not playing for the championship. They are not playing for relegation. So the positive thing of that is that they can start planning on what 2021 will be for them.
Yeah, that is true. I was actually very high on Melgar going into the season. that hasn't panned out. I'm sure we were also high on a couple other teams that we'll talk about in a bit, that it hasn't really worked out for them either. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the season now is just about, can they get the injured players back? Can they start to build for ahead of 2021? Can they get some of their younger players more minutes so that they can grow and whatever else? The last remaining hope, guys, when it comes to CONMEBOL competition among Peruvian teams is Sport Huancayo. We partially expected this, I guess, but in some ways didn't. They're through to the round of 16 after beating Liverpool from Uruguay 2-1 in the second leg, after getting a result in the first leg. Now, how impressive was Huancayo to basically get this sort of a result? Now, they obviously got it under, some would say, controversial circumstances, but I mean, at the end of the day, all these matches in CONMEBOL can be very controversial. We're obviously coming off a couple of qualifiers that were controversial. And, you know, obviously it's never pretty with Huancayo, but they did get the job done in the end. So, Chito, what do you think of Huancayo getting through and just the, I guess, the mental strength of them to be able to do so, to get to the round of 16?
Well, something that happened with Huancayo that got my attention right away was that during the beginning, when they struggled, they had Pinto on goal. And he was the key player. He was really safe. He took the lead for the team. And then I think everyone kind of copied that attitude. And then it was reflected. Then today, Cáceres being one of the most experienced, and then Sanchez, I think they didn't take that role. They were not good role models for the team. So Pinto did an amazing job. Something that got my attention too is that I don't know if it was Valencia or it was all on the players, but the free kicks were pretty amazing. The first goal was a sweet kick, but then on top of that, there was another free kick who was really close. So I really enjoyed that. And then on top of that, something that we have to remember is that by the end of the Fase Uno, Sport Huancayo, they pressed the gas and they started winning three games in a row. And that's pretty much why they got that second spot over Cristal. So I think Valencia's doing an amazing job with them, and I'm really happy for him. And yeah, I mean Wilmar Valencia, not Marco Valencia, Wilmar Valencia, the coach of Sport Huancayo.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, they've, like, look, it's never flashy. It's not what you may, you know, want to tune in to watch, but it's effective. They have a strategy. They have a system. They have players who fit into it, and it works. So that's what you have to, and especially in knockout competitions, you need that. You need that solidity. You need that clinical finishing, which they've obviously gotten, and you need to be able to fight through some adversity, right? I mean, I know these are all cliches, but it helps you, obviously, in these situations, and it might be able to serve them well going forward, which, speaking of, Kevin, I'll go to you on this one. Coquimbo Unido is their opponent. They finished fifth in Chile last year. They're struggling a bit this year. And what's kind of funny is they're kind of the reverse Huancayo in that they're not the most solid defensively, yet they don't also score a lot. So do you feel like this is a good enough matchup for Huancayo? Obviously, keeping in mind that for Peruvian clubs, nothing is ever easy.
I think it's going to be a tough match regardless. It's international competition, and Coco made short work of Estudiantes de Mérida. But I think Mar Valencia has a solid going into this match. He has a squad that's been together for at least 3 years, I want to say. A lot of the same faces, you know, Newman, Yulia, Velarde, Pinto, Rojas. So I think a lot of these guys know each other. They can trust into each other, and they really have nowhere else to go but up. This, they already made, you know, the historic first step getting them into this round. So I see the morale being very high going into this.
Yeah, so can I. Renato, are you confident in Huancayo going forward here, given everything that we've talked about, specifically with their style of play and how effective it is in this format?
I think they got a good chance. For one, for a team that is coming from a high altitude, say like Huancayo, I feel this Sport Huancayo team is the opposite of what Binacional was in the Libertadores this year, where you got with Binacional, who showed no effort, and it was telling that no Juliaca equals no effort. With this Huancayo team, yes, they're no longer in Huancayo, but they decided to just forget about the altitude and focus on putting actual effort. And I believe with that mindset, it will help them achieve more to what goes beyond at their home and just focus on working as a team. So I think they got a good chance. Though it remains to be seen if everything could be executed properly, but I got hope.
As do I. They were probably the one team that you would look at that was remaining in CONMEBOL competition when Libertadores was also still going on, and you thought, yeah, like the way this team plays, the familiarity between everybody, which Kevin mentioned, is very helpful, and it's certainly serving them well now. We'll move into Liga 1 specifically now, just because a couple of some pretty big stories have happened since we last recorded a show, chief among them, and it's very fitting that we have two Aliancistas on with us tonight, because Mario Salas is out as Alianza Lima coach. He won just two of his 18 games in charge, which is really abysmal for anybody, let alone for the coach of Alianza Lima. They also made changes to their sporting operations as well. Gustavo Ceballos, the sporting director, is gone. Jose Bellina from Sporting Cristal comes in as his replacement. So a lot of major changes happening at Alianza these days. Chito, you were kind of chomping at the bit here to talk about this. So I'll start with this question. Is all of this situation that Alianza has been under for a while, is it all on Salas? And if not, how much of it do you pin on Mario Salas?
Well, he's not the only one responsible for the bad situation that Alianza is going through, but he's the main one. He's the one who take the decisions of what players are going to play what game. He's the one who had been switching goalkeepers, switching the strikers. He's the one who made the call, who rejected to get Federico Rodriguez back to Alianza. He's the one who pretty much approved Rocky Balboa and Aguiar to leave the team in the middle of a pandemic. And he's the one who requested Rubio. So I would say 80%, he's responsible for 80% of what's going on with Alianza. And on top of that, after watching the game on Monday, we were able to see that he was making some really bad calls, like not having Kluivert Aguilar as a starter or giving him more minutes, I was really pissed off seeing that he was like the fifth sub in most of the games, knowing that he's young, that he has a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, different things like there was a huge difference in the last two games, even the game we lost against Municipal, having Rinaldo Cruzado. I know he's old, I know he's slow, but having him taking free kicks and corner kicks, it was a huge difference. We were able to generate more attacks, more shots on goal. And then last but not least, just giving the confidence to the players. I only remember him saying, dale, 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 and that was it. Memo Salas was able to give more directions to the player, point out little things and mistakes of the player. So that was a huge improvement. So I'm super happy that he's gone and he's not in the team anymore.
There you go. Kevin, your thoughts on Salas's role in Alianza's current predicament? How much of it, in your eyes, do you feel like he should take? And now that he is gone, do you feel like something will change, especially given that those above him have also been kind of cleaned out?
Honestly, I feel like it's just a confusing topic, because if you look at a lot of these, you know, these guys, they just weren't, their heads weren't in it. They weren't in the game for like the last, what, 12? Like Asquith pulled off like his best game all season. Some of these things don't make sense. I don't think it was Camita, like they say, you know, but I want to say that Salas had at least 30% of it as being his fault. He lost several players, honestly, for ridiculous reasons, because we didn't see any other team losing, you know, their foreigners because of pandemic or anything. There was definitely some miscommunication between the administration. You saw some people let go, like Zeballos. So overall, the year was a bust for Alianza. I think they have nowhere to go but up. There's only 6 matches. I want to say that the guys are playing for their contracts for next year at this point. There's really no pressure with the fans aren't even at the game. So it's just a confusing year that I assume all Aliancistas want to end.
Yeah, very true. Chito, now that the changes have been made, obviously I spoke about a couple of them already, but you know, with Bellina coming in, with now the sporting operations going through a bit of change now, how confident are you, if you are, that there will be proper change to the point where Alianza is not only competing for titles again, but are also maybe entertaining the fans a bit more with the way that they play?
Well, in general, talking about managers, I think now that this happened on the first year of Fondo Blanquiazul and knowing that they have 7 more to come, now I'm pretty sure they're going to have a plan B and plan C if something doesn't go as planned. That's something good, and I'm really happy that this happened on the first year. If we talk about what happens on the field, I think now they're going to be smarter next time they get a new player or whenever they decide to let go a player. As I mentioned, they need to have a plan B, then have kind of like a balance of, I don't want to say authority, but let's not have too many heads to make a decision. And then on top of that, have people who will be responsible for the decisions as well. So knowing who's in charge of what, try to make sure not everyone, let's say they don't need to make everyone happy with their decision. Something that had happened at the beginning of the year. That's why they got so many players with similar styles, with similar problems. So I think that's something good that I'm pretty sure they learned their lesson. Fans learned the lesson as well. Not get too excited about those players. Just kind of like appreciate what we have, what we had earned, and then get back to the top of and start fighting for championships again.
We'll move over to maybe just to close out the section, because we're now a few games into the Clausura Fase 2, and we've seen a couple of pretty crazy things. Sport Boys surging up the table again, much like they did last year, to pretty much steer themselves, for now at least, out of relegation trouble. Sporting Cristal is still perfect. Cesar Vallejo and UTC continue their strong starts from the Apertura. So, Renato, what is your big early takeaway thus far in the Clausura?
Well, Cristal is, for right now, is doing a very solid job of keeping the top of their place, especially since, as of now, Raul just lost. But I think it's still going to be a tight race between Raul and Cristal. But Cesar Vallejo and UTC, they're looking like threatening contenders for the one of those sides, I believe, in the Clausura. But I can also say for the other side of the Clausura in the other group with the Alianza and Sport Boys, it's kind of a bit of a hard prediction, but Sport Boys is rising from the dead, as best to say it. I don't know, like, something about them is just like in the Apertura, they were up like a ticking time bomb, but now suddenly they just woke up. So I guess we could see the rise of Sport Boys again.
Yeah, man, they always save their bacon right when they kind of need to. It's like, oh crap, we got to start playing. Let's make sure that we don't get in trouble, and then they end up steering themselves out of it against all odds sometimes. Kevin, what would be your big early takeaway thus far since the new phase?
I think my prediction in the chat was that Cesar Vallejo would take Group B. I still stand by that, because they look to me like the strongest squad, and even when they only had a ridiculous like three players on the bench, they still pulled off results. So I don't think there's anything stopping Chemo this year from at least making the final, or the playoff final for the Fase 2. And as far as Group A, I think Cienciano is going to be the spoiler. I think they proved it against La U. They almost pulled off the upset against Cristal. So I think they can pull it together to at least be fighting at the top.
And finally, Chito, what would be your big takeaway so far, thus far, in the new phase?
Well, I think in general, I'm surprised about the games. There are some games that are pretty entertaining. There are some games that I didn't expect too much. For example, the game against Juan Cienciano, I thought would be really easy for Universitario, but Cienciano put up a really good game. And then I agree with Kevin about Vallejo. They're doing a pretty good job. And then on the other side, I think Cristal will be the one taking the lead. The only thing that we will need to keep an eye on is that how far away is Cristal from Universitario, because knowing that Universitario took a lead of 3 points with Sport Huancayo not giving 100% on Fase 2, I think that they can get that spot to the final right away, and then only the second position or the first position of Grupo A will go against the first position of Grupo B. I'm not 100% sure, because I know it's super confusing, the structure of Liga Uno, but in that situation, it will hurt whoever is fighting on Grupo A as well. So we will have to see how many points of advantage takes Cristal or whoever leads Group A.
And yeah, spot on, by the way. You were correct. Let's move over and finish off the show, guys, with La Selección, because this is... well, obviously very topical with games coming up next week, first off against Chile and then against Argentina. 26 players were called up to face Chile and Argentina. Some have and, well, may drop out, while others could be added from here on out. Alexander Callens, who we initially thought was not going to be available, is now going to be allowed to travel to South America against all odds, seemingly, given that New York City is in a playoff spot, but he is allowed to go. Carlos Zambrano and Carlos Cáceres are suspended. We still don't know whether it's one game or more. CONMEBOL was supposed to announce something today, but classic CONMEBOL, they have not. So that's still in limbo. But the fact that Alexander Callens is going to go means that they won't be short on center backs compared to the names that were called up initially. The big news, however, guys, is the inclusions of Jean-Pierre Reiner and Gianluca Lapadula. I cannot believe I'm actually saying this, because it's felt like forever. But yes, Gianluca Lapadula is now going to be a Peruvian national team player. He actually ended up scoring for Benevento just days after his call-up. Pretty decent goal. But Peruvian media is, I think, expectedly so, going absolutely crazy because they've dreamt of this moment seemingly for years. So we'll start with Lapadula's inclusion first because he's probably the likeliest to feature more often. Chito, seeing as how you are on the ground in Peru, what has been the reaction there to Lapadula getting called up? And then also, what do you think of the call-up of Lapadula?
Well, as a Lapadulist, this has been the best week of my life. I'm really happy for his call. I think it was just the right time to call him, knowing that we have Farfán now injured, and now he's going through a lot of things on top of the injury. Like, it seems that the breakup he had with his ex-girlfriend had been really crazy, and now she's on TV talking smack about him. Then about the situation with Paolo Guerrero, and then, unfortunately, the poor work of Ruiz Diaz in the national team during the first game. I think it was the right time to get Lapadula on the team. Besides that, then with Riner, I think it's Gareca trying a different player instead of Zambrano. In my opinion, I think that Gareca didn't like the aggressiveness of Zambrano. And then on top of that, Zambrano is not starting all the games in Boca now that Izquierdos is recovered. I think it's time to try a new player. I'm not too excited about Riner Cole, but, you know, Gareca, he's rarely wrong, so we'll see how it goes. And then about what you mentioned with the press, Jay, everyone's going crazy with Lapadula. Not only do you see Lapadula's name everywhere on TV shows, on the news, the day that Juan Cayo won, the press was talking about Lapadula, said that he likes Alianza and stuff like that. So it's crazy. It's pretty wild. But I mean, it's most likely is because what Peruvians want to read, what Peruvians want to hear. Yeah. And then something else that it's pretty wild. You're going to see some Lapadula's lovers, people who love Lapadula's goal and are excited about it. And then some other ones who hate it and are against that. And they are complaining why they don't give opportunities to Peruvian players who were born and raised in Peru instead, and there's no gray area for that. Yes. Which is wild, but
yeah.
But I don't know, that's what we will have to deal until November 13.
Yeah, that's for sure. There's definitely no gray area when it comes to Lapadula, that's for sure. Kevin, what do you think of the Lapadula call-up in general? How do you think he's going to fit in? And I guess, is this the right decision to make at this point in time?
So I think Gareca saw his options in the last, you know, two matches, and he's like, yo, Guerrero's out. Farfán has no club. Ruiz Diaz realistically hasn't worked. And then he has a bunch of, you know, newbies from Liga 1. Rodriguez just went to Colombia, but essentially a bunch of newbies from Liga 1. And we've seen Gareca's never had a problem with this, with the where they're from, where they were born. He's called up Costa, Calcaterra, Asquez, Benavente. There's been no issue, in my opinion. As far as how he'll fit in, Lapadula, I'm not going to say he's a savior or anything, but I think, you know, Carrillo, Cueva, Yotun, Aquino, Tapia are playing at a very high level at this point. He's going to have to adapt to the system. I don't think Peru's going to adapt to him. So that's something he'll have to work out as soon as he starts training with the Selección. And if Ruiz Diaz doesn't make it for some reason because MLS, I could actually see him starting.
Yeah, which is the crazy thing. They're so short on options currently. Obviously, Santiago Ormeño is maybe waiting in reserve, but we saw he was kind of on the provisional list, wasn't ended up called, but he's on the radar. But obviously, at this point in time, Lapadula is probably the only one playing and in form and who can probably get in there readily and just do a job, which is kind of crazy to think about because he hasn't yet earned a cap, but that's the situation. Renato, what are your thoughts on the Lapadula call-up?
Well, got a lot to say on that. So regarding Lapadula being called up in general, it's been the craziest stream of the Peruvian media for a long time. It's finally happened. I will say this, the way the Peruvian media is approaching this has been, in the best way you can describe it, too far, where you got like people just posting Lapadula everywhere, but it got to a point where even like a lot of Peruvian like offices for like DNEs like were just reporting it through their Twitter accounts that hey, Lapadula's already got his DNE, while many other people have been waiting to get their DNEs for months right now. And also we just feel like the amount of like pressure that the Peruvian press is giving is like, let's calm down. Yes, Lapadula plays in Serie A, and yes, you can say he's the best option, but the one thing people need to keep in mind of, will he work for us? Will Lapadula be able to perform for us? Will he not have to be pulled back by this pressure? Because I hate to say it, but people are going to expect an instant result from Lapadula. They're not going to like wait for him to adapt. They want the results now. But at the same time, I can see why Gareca also called him up. There's really no options right now for center forwards. Unfortunately, Paolo injured. Rui Diaz, he theoretically could be the next like number nine available, but he's really not number nine that Peru plays for. Aldair Rodriguez just joined America de Cali, but he's adapting. Sucar is still inexperienced, and let's give him time for him to find himself. And Romeno hasn't been scoring that much recently for Puebla, so theoretically, Lapadula is the best option available. And all I can say is that for Lapadula, good luck, Italo Peruano. just give us what we need, and I'll love you forever. In fact, try even doing like a Cristian Ramos celebration if you score a goal against Chile. Then I will love you forever.
Oh my God, yeah, he'll be the hero. Like, literally no one will talk about, oh, how Peruvian is he really? And like, you know, how good is his Spanish? And like, that all goes out the window if he scores a winner against Chile. Like completely out the window.
Sign her up. But there's also one thing that just kind of makes me feel down about this Lapadula situation. Now, we're in a page where we have to contact a player who's not born in Peru to play for us. Anyone can play for Peru. If you're willing to participate and to wear that shirt to defend for us, go for it. I will love you forever for that, especially if you want to make one of your parents as proud. But at the same time, it just makes me realize that we really are just lacking options like when it comes to homegrown talent playing abroad. We're ever since the days of Pizarro scoring golazos in the Champions League and in the Bundesliga, we haven't been having some good like players in these reputable leagues abroad. It just makes you wonder, is there something going on with us trying to export players or anything? Because theoretically, you can even have like more options by now that goes beyond Lapadula that were already homegrown.
Yeah, well, I feel like that, I mean, obviously it's a wider discussion, which we can get into. Claudio Pizarro himself has said that it's pretty disappointing and telling that there are very few Peruvians in top five leagues. Like, we're talking pretty much formed in Peru, even if you want to consider him formed in Peru because he played for EGB, but he really kind of broke through in the Netherlands. Renato Tapia is probably the only one currently in a top five league that was kind of formed in Peru, born there, and then spent a little bit of time in the system before going over to Europe, who's now in a top five league, which is a massive problem. And look, it's not a bad thing. Like, I mean, a lot of countries everywhere are naturalizing players, and I feel there's nothing wrong with that. But then you also do have to look at, you know, is what we're doing at home working? And I think right now, I feel like at least with certain positions, it's not. But I also feel like tons of countries, even ones like Germany and France, maybe not France is a bad example, but you look at how many, for example, in Germany, how many quality midfielders came through, but then no strikers were formed. And then they had a dearth of options at strikers. Then a bunch of forwards and or, you know, kind of pseudo false nines were coming out. And then they had no proper fullbacks, right? So I feel like you go through these phases. Like there was even a time when we were wondering, oh, like, are we ever going to have depth in any position? All of a sudden, all these center backs come up. Then all these midfielders come through. Now we're seeing a bunch of fullbacks kind of coming to the forefront. Couple number 10s are starting to do their thing. Obviously, Rodrigo Vilca, chief among them right now, going to Newcastle. I feel like it just goes through cycles, and eventually it gets to a point where, oh crap, like we're not developing enough of this player. We need to bring it up there. But in general, there aren't enough players going to top five leagues. And I feel like that won't solve itself until we start seeing, in a way, maybe just a revamp of how players are developed in some ways. I think that this new wave of youth that's coming through is helping in that regard. Obviously, Yuriel Celi, Aguilar, as we talked about. The more of those players that come through and then maybe get a move elsewhere and shine in a bigger environment, the better. Then other teams will be willing to take risks. But for now, it is certainly a problem. As for La Padula, the one question I have for this, and I'll throw it back to you on this, Kevin, because having watched him quite a bit in Italy, he comes across as very much a poacher-type striker, which Peru kind of has in Rui Diaz. Now, quality-wise, is La Padula better than Rui Diaz? You can make the argument, sure, especially because he's been playing his trade in a top league for a few years now. But stylistically, does he fit, given that you need to get him the ball in order for him to really do what he does best, and that's score? He's very clinical. Do you feel like he would have a problem given the fact that someone like Rui Diaz and or a player in his mold hasn't really worked out?
Ah, a tough one. You know, we always hope for the best, but if his style is the same as Rui Diaz, which I think there might be a little bit of a difference, because I've seen him coming in from or dropping back to actually get involved. Not this year. This year I haven't seen him. But I think he can provide just a little bit more. It entirely depends on him. I'm sure in his first performance, he's going to want to be involved in everything to try to show off. You just hope for the best. I have no other way to answer that one on this one.
No, it's true, because like we obviously don't know how he's going to fit in, how he's going to, you know, in terms of the chemistry with his teammates. Like, there's so many variables at play. And it is true. Like, I think overall he does like to get involved a bit more, but you do tend to see him closer to the box. That's not to say he'll just camp out there and just wait for service. I'm sure, especially playing for Peru, he's going to want to prove his worth and show, hey, like, I'm not just a goal scorer. I can do this, I can do that. But it is something maybe to watch out for, because, you know, obviously Peruvians are very quick to raise someone on a pedestal and they're very quick to break it back down again. So let's just hope that that doesn't happen at the very least. Let's give him a bit of time, especially given that these are pivotal qualifiers. He's coming in very cold when it comes to the national team perspective. Let's move over to Reiner, because kind of lost in La Padula's call-up was him. It's understandable because he probably won't get probably the same minutes as La Padula might, because there's just so much depth at center back, and he's probably called up because, oh, Zambrano is suspended. Zambrano was maybe a bit too aggressive in these last two games. He's not playing as much, which Chito talked about. So let's bring in someone who, you know, maybe we can get a look at this guy because he's 24. He's playing in Europe. Yes, it's in the second division in Spain, but he's been formed in Europe. He's maybe decently polished. Renato, as someone who very much sympathizes and loves Gianfranco Chavez, and that there are quite a few talented Peruvian center backs out there right now, do you feel like this move makes sense? Do you understand it? And or is it a move that you want to see made, Reiner being called up regularly to the national team?
Yes and no. But first, let me get to the thing I feel like people need to understand with players like Reiner or La Padula is that, yes, they're formed in Europe, but do you actually watch them? In Reiner's case, I watched him many times, and I gotta say, he's just average at best. His strengths involve like using his head in the air to bring an air pass, or maybe to use the block shots in the air, but when you actually watch him, he's very like all over the place in the possibly in a bad way. Passing is sloppy, and at times he can get outrun by another, like a midfielder, and he's not the most fastest, certainly. And I feel like Gianfranco Chavez has the edge because, like, he's like possibly he knows how to dominate well in the air and the ground. He's very attack minded and knows how to transition well on defense. However, I feel like why Reiner got called up is because Gareca was always interested in Reiner at some point, and possibly thought it was now the perfect opportunity to test him to see how he is as a player. And I feel like Reiner has the ability, like, of being a bit taller, because let's be honest, I feel like Peru's center backs are less, I say, lacking in height right now, but I feel like that doesn't mean anything, but could be an advantage. But as I say, I think there's better options than Reiner, but I just wish him the best.
Yeah, I think we all do. We got a question related to the kind of Reiner Chavez argument, because I feel like that's the first name that comes to mind when someone not named Gianfranco Chavez gets called up. Chito, I'll ask you this question from Abel Gamarra at Abelanda 81. Your thoughts on Reiner getting the call over Chavez? Is Chavez the better option because he can theoretically cover the left back position? What do you say to all of that?
I think, Chavez is doing a great job at Cristal for the last 2 years. He's doing an amazing job, especially because during the last 2-3 years, we haven't seen a really good defender at Liga Uno. Maybe the Nemostier, but then today he didn't have, like, the best game of all. But Chavez is doing a good job. Well, with Reiner, I think they had been following him for the last 2 years. This is not the first time I heard about him. And then one more time, knowing the situation with Zambrano, I think there's a little bit of Gareca trying to give a lesson to Zambrano about his aggressiveness, about his attitude. So I think it's a little bit of both things. But yeah, in general, Chavez, I think he might get a call soon, especially because knowing that the situation with Cristian Ramos, I think we should question his call instead of Reiner. But yeah, I think in general, Chavez is doing a good job. He might get called. I'm pretty sure he will be one of the new calls for the games in March. But one more time, it's not the first time we hear about Reiner. I think Gareca had been waiting for the right time to call him. Most likely, Gareca gave him some talk to him about leaving Cadiz because he rarely played there. And then he had been following him at Cartagena or whatever his name is called in second division, and there you go.
Fair enough. We'll move over to the rest of the squad. For starters, Edison Flores, he's back after missing out last month at DC United's request. How massive is that for Peru, given our struggles, but certainly attacking-wise, in that position down the left in the first two games? Kevin, what do you think of the fact that Orejas is now back?
If Orejas is back, I'm excited. You know, he was tied for top goal scorer in the last qualifiers. I think he's shown up every time that we've needed him. And even if we stick with the 4-3-3 and maybe he's on the bench, it gives us another option. It makes Peru more dangerous. And that's only ever a good thing. I'm sure that Flores had a rough year so far. I think he wants to bounce back, and he feels like one of those selección players that just show up for us.
Yeah, definitely. Usually, when he's in a Peru shirt, he does deliver his best performances regardless of his club form. So that's obviously the good news. Maybe a little less notable, but it's certainly a just reward. For Renato Solis to be called up for the first time, even if he ends up being a third goalkeeper, even if he gets dropped entirely and say, Gareca says, all right, Carlos Cáceres, you're only suspended for the one game, we'll bring you in just in case, but I doubt that ends up happening. But Renato, what do you think of Solis getting called up for the first time? Did he deserve it based on his form for Cristal this season?
Absolutely. Gotta say, Solis has been possibly one of the best young keepers in Liga you know, this season, especially it's when you think about the rise of Renato Solis. Because yes, he did start a few matches for Cristal last year, but this year has been his year. For him being a starter in the pre-Olympicos, and you gotta admit that he was possibly one of Peru's best players, making some impressive saves. His like ability to not take risks and to make sure like also to like get out of his line but in the right time. But then he, as soon as Pato Alvarez gets in trouble, so Solis comes in to step in and show like Mosquera saying, listen, I'm not a second choice keeper, I'm a first choice keeper. And even if I can make some mistakes due to my inexperience, I can give you a great performance, especially the making that goal line look like a wall. And it's well deserved for him. I can hopefully maybe see Solis as the next guy, Gallese in the next generation at some point. It also made me to also get some like the go ahead from like Gallese and Carvalho as from experienced keepers. And he deserves it over Cáceres, because let's be real, Cáceres has been in poor form for a while.
Yes. Yeah, he's not been good this year, as opposed to last year when he really did recover well and was very solid for Melgar. Not the case this time around. We'll talk more about the matches next week as we preview the games in depth. We're once again going to have guests to help us cover Chile as well as Argentina. So stay tuned for that next week. For now, we were just focusing on the squad and kind of the new inclusions and what it all means. So hopefully that will suffice for you, the listeners. Until then, I am Peter Galindo. You can follow me on Twitter at GalindoPW. You can follow the show at Peru Waltz. And wherever you listen to your podcast, please leave us a rating. It helps boost the show and get more listeners involved as well. We will go around the table now to hand out our Twitters and give our final shout-outs. Renato, I'll start with you first. Your Twitter and final shout-out for the week.
Twitter handle is Renato_Sun. Think of a shout-out. Papadula, listen, I'm happy that you got the call up. I know it might be controversial for some people, and you and I might have disagreed in the past, but the moment has come. I want you to win the date. If you score, I'll love you forever. Forever, ever. You'll make all the Peruvians abroad like me happy.
Yes, we will lobby Lapadulistas if he scores against Chile, that's for sure. Chito, your Twitter handle and final shout out for the week.
Well, my handle is Chito del Ocho, number 8, Chito del Ocho. And well, my shout out will be to all the Peruvian fans who liked the Benevento page on Twitter, on Facebook. It was hilarious to follow the game on Twitter. All the Peruvian fans saying, oh, that defense is horrible. You should hire Abraham. You should hire all these players. They were just talking Spanish during the whole game. It was lovely. It made my day. And if you haven't checked it out, go on the Benevento Facebook page and check all the posts about La Padula or anything related to a game. You will laugh. For sure, you will laugh.
That's why I love Peruvians so much. They take over a page and then they put their stamp on it. That's what's so awesome about us from time to time. Kevin, your Twitter handle and your final shout out for the week.
Hi guys, you can follow me at kmontalban7, and my shout out is to Huancayo. Good job doing the dirty work, getting to the next step, and keep it up. That's it. That's all I can ask.
That is very well said. You can't always say that about Peruvian clubs in Conmebol competition. That is for sure. Anyways, that will do it for us this week. This is the Peruvian Waltz team, and we are signing off.
Rubiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González Orlando, la torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale Mifrin y Cubillas, y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan la selección.